All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to part two of our talk with Boys to Men. I got to say, we were having so much fun. I didn't even know it was going to be this much fun. Normally, we could wrap up a Questlove Supreme episode and just, you know, like shy of it, north of an hour. And I don't know, the time just kept going on. And next thing you know, it was two episodes worth. So I haven't had this extensive of a talk with them since our days in high school. So it's really good to catch up with the guys. I hope you're enjoying it. Without further ado, part two of our conversation, Questlove Supreme and Boys to Men.
Of the projects you worked on, what is your favorite one? What do you feel that, from artistic achievement, what do you feel like this is my legacy?
I won't say project per se, but I would say one of my biggest enjoyments at this stage and age in my career and where we are is when we do our orchestra concerts. We do a concert with just us three vocally. And, you know, whatever orchestra we're around, whether it's the New York Symphonic Orchestra or whether we're in L.A. at the Hollywood Bowl. And we do all of our records. And it's all stripped down to just strings and brass and drums, nothing electronic at all. And it's just,
I really want to see that.
It's awesome.
It's an atmosphere. Yeah, it's an atmosphere that, because you've been involved in the business the way we have so long, you go on tour, you got the samples in the backgrounds and you sing over here and the drums and the guitars, electric, everything. When they strip all that out, it takes you back to the high school performing arts. It's almost like everybody, it's the door just opens. It's a brand new, you know, fresh air to where the vocals have room to breathe. Like you live in a whole different space. You're not fighting against the electronic keyboard or somebody's bass being too loud. You know, you just get to flow over the strings and the harps and the whole nine. And for me, whenever we do all the stuff that we do with everything jumping around or whatever, whenever they say there's an orchestra concert, it's just a sigh of relax and relief to where it's like, thank you, Jesus. Now let's just go and sing our songs. And that's just the best.
I'm gonna tell you one thing, Amir. The thing that the thing that I'm most proud of is something we haven't done yet. And I hope that we do it because we've had this conversation before, and that's to do an acoustic show. Like, you know, the guy and I, you know, we've all learned how to play guitars and, you know what I'm saying? You know, that's
it. I totally forgot. Yes.
So, you know, we've talked about this as far as like actually doing like, you know, a set or unplug type of show.
How long have you guys been doing that format? For our listeners that don't know. Yeah, the last time I seen you guys perform, it was you three with your guitars, which I didn't know.
Not me. I didn't have no guitar.
We didn't know either.
But
we didn't know either.
Yeah, Nate plays bass and I play guitar. And we started playing around, what is it? I was 43, so that was 5 years ago. So that was in 2014, 2015, something like that. And we just started to play. We just felt like it was an idea. It was around the time we did this album called Collide.
Yeah, and exactly.
One of the guys was like, that was working with us, was like, yo, you guys should learn how to play guitar. And he was like, oh, I guess we should. So Nate and I went to Tower in Vegas, and I picked up a modern size Strat, and he picked up a bass, and I've been playing ever since, and Nate's been playing ever since, and it's broadened the show to the point now where we've added guitar parts to the show and you know, acoustic and electric. And this is something that has opened all of our eyes to the possibilities of us taking our music to even another stage and, you know, potentially just doing an all unplugged type of thing. Because we did it. Like, just like you said, the last time you saw us, we were doing Come Together. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and Water Runs Dry, and I'll Make Love to You all acoustic.
That shit was incredible.
That sounds
good. I loved it.
Thank you.
I loved it.
You got to see the orchestra show. You got to do that too, though.
Yes.
Throw it out there.
I was about to say, when y'all got there? Of course.
Exactly, yeah. Because we can tell COVID to go to that home.
Really, right? Yeah. I wanted to...
COVID's not invited.
Man, yeah. I wanted to jump back on y'all on your production for a little while. You were speaking, Nate, you were saying earlier just about how, you know, the records that you guys did and versus the records that, you know, that, you know, the I'll Make Love to You's and the End of the Roads. I always thought, just as a fan of you guys, whenever people would make the argument of like, you know, the Boyz II Men versus Jodeci argument, like, well, Jodeci was more this, but Boyz II Men was kind of clean cut. I will always go to y'all production and I would say like, nah, this is what they really on. So like, Nate, you did a record, the Johnny Gill record, I Got You, and the Think of You case. And when y'all did the 112, Now That We're Done, like the off the stuff, like that, to me, I was like, nah, this is what these niggas is really on. You know what I mean? So,
we were
I always wanted to know how y'all felt about
this. Was the Jodeci Boyz II Men thing, like, was that a thing? Were y'all the Black Beatles real. Versus?
It was real, but not created by us. It was real because we were all Absolutely. Really good friends. We freaking love, like, Jodeci is just like, I mean, it's yin and yang. There would be no Jodeci without Boyz II Men and vice versa. We, every time we would see him on the road, we try to catch up with him. Hey, I mean, we love those dudes. I mean, the audiences made it more of the competition.
Beatles,
and it was more friendly for us. But I mean, they're different identities. I mean, you know, Jodeci, you know, they have the two singers and they had the producer, and, you know, we had the four singers and the three producers. I mean, we kind of did a little bit of everything. So everybody had their own little genre, but producing and writing was something, again, that we really enjoyed because we're the type of guys that, you know, being emotional, we like to sing what we write, you know what I'm saying? And when we got a chance to get with Face and Jimmy and Terry and all, I'm like, all the lessons we could possibly learn from those guys, we tried to roll over into the stuff that we did. But for as far as, like I said, we wrote, the first song I ever wrote in my life was Please Don't Go. I think I was 14, 15 years old.
Who are you talking to?
that's years of getting stomped on. Like, you know, like we talked about in the high
school. Oh, that's right.
Nobody,
you
know, nobody really checked for us. But my point being, we all come from that. All four of us came from writing words down and creating songs and singing them. That's how our whole career jumped off. So as it went in, you know, those songs you talk about, Now That We're Done, all those other songs, that was the stuff that we just naturally did because that's part of who we were. It just may not have always gotten on the Boyz II Men albums because
I love too many producers. Those songs, man. Yeah, I love that. And Sean, like, even like your Sean, your soundtrack stuff. And I told you this before in presentation, like the Visions of a Sunset and like the record you did.
Oh, that was for a monster. Monster.
Man, I love that record.
Sounds Opus. Monster.
Yeah, Miss Sounds Opus.
Oh,
and
wow.
The joint you had on Down in the Delta.
Real quick, I won't cut you off, but
the first time
I heard that song, when I heard, because I know he played keys on it. When I first heard that dude, I had a tear in my eye. That's my brother. You know, I had a tear. When I heard boom, 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 I was like, oh, my God. I just wanted to crawl up in fetal position like, oh, I love him.
I tried to unplug his keyboard a couple of times because my
love
office was
that
right
song.
Next to him.
love that song, man.
Yo, before I forget, dude. What happened to Uncle Sam?
Uncle Sam, yo, I was about to say the same shit.
Where he at?
Uh oh, He out there getting some of that Jesus money. But anyway. he actually is getting Jesus money. But
okay.
We had him sign to Stone Creek, our record label back in Philly, and we all we all fell in love with him the first day we heard him, and felt it was something we could work with. We went in and produced the record. I think the album sold a million records, and the single sold a million records, and the album was sold half a million records. And then we went back in to renegotiate with Epic to do another record. And unfortunately, he wasn't really happy with his terms. Now, I will tell you one thing that we learned in our business for us. We don't treat people the way we were treated. A lot of artists and producers be like, well, I went through it and you got to go through it. We were never those guys. Right? We made sure that the deals you got, you were happy with. And if you didn't like those deals, we could tear those deals up and you could walk. But, Sam, for some reason at that time, had a whole different agenda of what he really wanted to do. And we didn't really want, stifle him from that. So we said, okay, well, if that's what you want to do, cool. So when we walked from him, the label said, well, if y'all ain't with him, we ain't with him. So that's what happened.
We ain't either.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep.
Can I ask y'all, it's funny, y'all mentioned the Jodeci thing. I was kind of always curious how y'all felt since they were kind of allowed to be the bad boys. But y'all, especially at the end of the road, it was like a whole persona of preppiness and whatever. But knowing who y'all really are, South Philly, North Philly.
I personally took offense.
I was going to say, what was that like? And how was it like wearing those masks at times when you really had to wear the mask, I feel like?
Wait, was
Alex Vanderpool a real person?
Yeah, he was an actor.
Yeah, he was a character. He was a character.
All my children could watch a TV, watch it all the time. And that's how he came up with the look, because he used to dress that way.
But he ain't living at 17 with Christian. So yeah,
right.
I used to have a problem having to do that, because that wasn't me. Wasn't even close to me. You know what I'm saying? So to watch them get out there and have a chance to just be regular old niggas, I had a problem with that.
Right.
I just wanted to be me, and I couldn't, because I had to protect the entity of my guys, and it is what it is.
I was the only one from the suburbs, so I had to
assimilation.
With me personally, I feel like, I guess at a young age, I was looking at it as the music called for the entertainment value. You know what I'm saying? I mean, their music was gritty. Their music was, so you have him, my baby.
That's right.
It was, it was that. And we weren't there. So we couldn't personify that type of, we couldn't be that character. You know what I'm saying? No. And the funny thing is what people don't understand is what made us non-offensive is no matter what we were singing, we were no character. You understand? We were characters of our own personification singing love songs, which made it so non-offensive. People couldn't pinpoint us. They didn't know if we was black or white, you know what I'm saying, until they actually saw us. You got to understand, the Two album was bigger than Coolie High Harmony.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't on Coolie High Harmony. We weren't on the Two album.
On the cover, yeah. We weren't on the cover.
Was that by design?
That was by design.
Yeah.
By
design. That was another fight.
That really?
We wanted us to be on the cover, and we didn't want to be on the cover.
Y'all pulled the Isley Brothers 60s move. Wait, why? Yeah. Why did you do that?
Go ahead, Sean. You got it.
No, I mean, basically, we wanted it to be about the music, and we understood that, quite frankly, our faces on the cover, we felt at this point was kind of corny. So we wanted to make, the album itself be the concept. So,
and Juan came up with a damn good logo too.
Yeah, like I came up with the title.
That was your logo? Okay.
Yeah, I drew it. Pencil drew it.
Yeah, Wanye drew it, right? And he put it all together. Wanye actually drew this. So we had some guy. What's the Asian guy that we had create?
Johnny Lee
created like this metal thing. This was before, all the technology we have now.
It looks just like the drawing.
Mold of the Two thing, set it up in lighting. That's an actual picture that Two album cover. Different angle and made it look the way that it looked. And the label, we were at somebody's beach house, meeting with all the heads of Motown, because this is, we were the big group at the time. So everybody was talking, you know, wanted to hear our ideas, and they fought us, right? No, your face has got to be on the record. Your face got to be on the record. When they finally saw it and we put it out, we saw a paper newspaper article when the album came out and it reached a certain level. And the label was like, yeah, when we came up with the idea, we didn't want to put their faces on the album.
This Harrell era or Busby era?
No, this was before Harrell. But what's funny was that this was during the long CD box where it stuck down into the bin, and the picture was up top. So that's why they were fighting, because they wanted the faces to be up top. But when Juan came up with the idea, I literally remember him saying, it's got to look like the Batman symbol. It's got to look like something that's got that. And we fell in love with that idea of it. And we tried to take that idea to the label. But again, they were stuck on, oh, we got to put your faces on it. And I don't think that they realized, even after 8 or 9 million records, how strong the name of the group was.
Wow. Man. Wanye, I want to ask you real quick. Broken Hearted, man. session.
Please go in.
You know, during the time of Broken Hearted, Brandy was just coming out. She just had I Want to Be Down, and I really thought that she was like a great singer. I knew that she had something that I hadn't heard in a long time, you know, vocally. And I contacted her mom, and we were all talking. I said, yo, this girl, she's crazy. I would love to, you know, do some music with her, whatnot. This is before anything ever transpired relationship-wise. And gotcha. Her mom agreed, you know, and, you know, we all met up. I actually went to Carson, which is in California. Like, it was like the hood, you know what I mean? And I hung out, like, literally all day. Her boyfriend, and Ray J, when he was little, you know, the mom and dad. You know, I had my security with me, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I went down, and we hung out, and we just sang riffs and stuff, all of, you know, just copying each other's riffs. I was pretty young, but not that young. As time progressed, she became like my little sidekick, you know, like we would actually just literally hang out. And as time progressed, you know, hanging out so much, you begin to catch feelings, you know what I'm saying? And you know, it was really innocent feelings. And, transpired as she started getting older, you know, she started coming Anyway, she started coming into her womanhood, and I was getting old. And it's
so hard. Yo, man, with this Nate is always been my favorite.
People, we get older, we start closer, and that's what happened. And during that time, used to be in the studio all the time. You know, I actually was the one that got her on the Boys to Mentor. I'm the one that actually introduced her to the Moesha people. My manager was Quadri, was actually, you know, trying to find something for Boyz II Men to do. And I said, look, you know, we got Brandy down the hallway, and she used to be on Thea, you know what I'm saying? So they met up with her mom, you know what I mean? I'm the one that hooked her up to go on prom with Kobe.
Wow.
I'm the one that
damn.
Literally. I did. I actually,
so you're the reason my girlfriend Jocelyn got stood up for the prom.
This is the crazy thing is I wrote, me and my mom wrote the Moesha soundtrack, the Moesha song. Me and my mom.
Oh,
wrote,
wow.
Exactly. What?
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it was really.
Is that publishing right, Wanya?
They played them on a whole lot of stuff.
Because, you know, that was my girlfriend at the time. They act like I had nothing to do with it.
Man. I wasn't mad.
You know that shit on Netflix, man.
I know, right? but you know, Broken Hearted was one of the songs that came out of that. The song Broken Hearted was already on her album. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yo, we should do a duet. We should turn that joint and flip it around and just make it a duet. And her mom agreed. Everybody agreed. They produced the record, and boom, we did Broken Hearted. And we didn't even think it was going to be big, but we just knew it was a good song, you know?
Nah, it was a great song, man.
Yeah, so, you know, it was a time in our lives when we were really young, you know what I mean? Of course, people get in relationships and they get out of relationships. Everybody acts like it's so harsh of a situation. But people break up all the time, you know, especially as young as we are. You know what
and
I'm
we
saying?
Was asking right. you about the music, Wanya. You ain't thank you yeah, for that.
I
was, you ain't even.
I appreciate
that.
You going in. Yeah. Like, I didn't even know about the session. I was like, okay.
I mean, look, this is my man. This my man show, right?
Yeah.
I feel like you need right. to
you laced us with it.
You know what I'm all saying? Right.
Oh, I just had one of my deep cut questions on the Evolution album. There was a record, it was deep in the record, and I loved it. It was never single, nothing, To the Limit. And, man, I love that record. What was the if you remember even like what was the
know where I've been.
Yes. There's what was the story behind that one, man?
Monty, there's so many songs that I personally enjoy. We've done that were never single, and they could have been just as viable as anything else. But again, it's amazing when people's attention spans turn somewhere else. Mm. It doesn't matter how good your record is. It doesn't matter how good you are. If people are done with you, they're done with you. But To the Limit was one of those records. It's funny because I started writing that record in Jersey, presented most of it to the guys, and they wrote the rest. You know what I'm saying? And it was just a vibe. The track was made by Puffy's producers, and we wanted to do something that was sensual and accommodating to women. We understood that, you know, the ladies were our predominant, you know, demographic. So we wanted to create a scenario where we were kind of their everything. You know what I'm saying? Like and having that massage day with your guy, which was us. You know what I'm saying? And that pretty much was it. That was a spa day for our significant others. You know what I'm saying? And doing everything that every woman would dream of their man doing for. And that's pretty much it, man. You know,
that was a great song, man. I love that song. I love that record.
I think you're asking about me too.
Oh, Nate done put out some wine. It's about to get real, man.
No, this is the Harmony wine. Is this the Harmony wine right here?
Let us see the bottle because I didn't get here yet.
Yeah, y'all going to keep me here. I'm going to get drunk.
Let me see that.
Let's go.
Already there.
So what y'all doing? Zinfandel? What is that you got there, Nate? Is that a rosé?
Is that Harmony wine?
We got a little bit of everything.
Look behind Wanda's left shoulder. There's a Grammy and some wine. Whatever you need.
We got rosé. We got red. We got
Oyster Bay. Got Grammys and wine.
It's just called red.
And I know you're a food connoisseur, but you know wine got to be in the mix somewhere with that. Am I right?
Correct.
Yes.
When did you guys step into fine spirits, so to speak?
Dude, how long? This was years in the making.
This is called Harmony, year. Correct?
Yeah, it's called Harmony.
Yeah. There you go. Let me help you out a little bit.
Yeah, and they're all Bordeaux. They were grown in a Chateau Auguste, which is this place all the way in, you know, France, whatever. And
all the way
in France. And like deep France.
It sounds like a 4-year-old. All the way
in France. That's my Trump vernacular. And you know, basically, basically, you know, this was something that we've been experimenting and trying to get into for years, but we never really found the right people to get involved with business-wise. But we found the folks, we found the guys. And again, it's three wines. It's a Bordeaux Blanc, it's a Bordeaux Rosé, and it's a Bordeaux Red, or Rouge, as they call it. And you know, it's an affordable yet very tasty, multi-palated wine. Like it has such a great flavor, all of them. Like I don't want to sound like a commercial, and I don't want to sound like, you know.
You got me sold.
You know, but the crazy thing is I know you appreciate this, Amir. The way that they grow the grapes, you know, where they grow up, they play our music to the grapes.
Yeah. You better stop it, Juan. You better.
No,
sounds about right.
Yeah, it's a scientific word for it yes. that we can't remember.
I am so for this.
It's called genotic. It's called genotic.
It helps them fight off. Yeah, it helps them fight off a lot of different infections and things like that as they grow.
I've heard of this before where people use music to grow.
Yep. Yeah, they've done the research. So
Yeah. March so of France where they play like classical.
See, that's the selling point right there, y'all.
We can also do some Joey DeFrancesco, some Roots records, some Chris McBride. We can play that for the Graves too. We can start a, you know, like a jazz line of harmony. You know what I'm saying?
All the grapes are organically grown because it's better resistant to pesticides and disease and all that other stuff. So
said that.
We, you know, oh, okay. So we wanted to make sure.
I love y'all believing you.
So we wanted to make sure that the grapes, just like us, was organic. It was pure.
You got some too, Fonte?
He just got some brown.
Nigga, I had to pull up some Apple Crown. Shit. That shit. I'm drinking with boys and men. Nigga, you crazy? Out of here.
Shit. All I got is Fiji and peanut butter whiskey.
Yo, but what's crazy is this is like the first product that y'all have like put out in your career, right? Or my trip?
It really is. And we talk about that, and the question has been asked. And one of the things is that we've never been the type of group to do the so-called endorsement thing unless it's something that we really, really believe that is a part of our lifestyle, who we are, something we can represent, something that we can do. And we're just not good at faking it. You know what I'm saying? So this,
if you didn't title, know, you know.
The, you know, being older, you know, men now, and you know, being able to, you know, drink a glass of wine and relax and chill and be a part of friends, family, harmony, music, the sound, the different type of blends, the different grapes, all of it encompasses who we are and where we are at this point in our life. So here, here.
Here, here.
Yo, what's up? This is Fontigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at Airbnb.com/host.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, my last question. Have you guys been, have you been to the Broad Street Creative and Performing Arts?
Yes.
At all?
Yes.
Were you angry at how immaculate and clean?
Yes.
It was. Wasn't y'all school?
Mad as fuck.
Amir, let me give you a little.
I was mad as fuck.
Amir, let me give you a little insight.
It was like a condominium.
So when Mr. King passed away, and they had a new music teacher. The music teacher there was my original music teacher when I was in the sixth, seventh, eighth grade. They brought her from Meredith. So I spent a lot of time up there. My son went to this school. So I'm sitting in there. It looks like a college. And yeah, the fact that we fought the Colombians, you know what I'm saying? The fact that, you know, we didn't really have our own space in certain classrooms.
We didn't have groundwork for them to
have. Leaks in the ceiling, basketball on the roof with the gates, trying to make sure you don't jump off the edge. Yeah, it was very, very fucking frustrating. But
I was about to say, like, the acoustics of that bath, y'all used to, that urine-infested bathroom on the fourth floor, that's where y'all honed.
That's a plug-in.
Like, do you even feel like it's not official unless... Yeah. Is it even official if there's no urine inside of...
Yes, but we had to use our diaphragm. Like,
but how do y'all not expect this after this school has produced The Roots, Christian McBride, Boyz II Men? Like, isn't this the natural evolution
of what... I'm glad that they had a safe environment.
Like,
I'm glad they had a safe environment. But when I came... I went back there with Tariq a year and a half ago, and I could see my reflection on the floor.
I tell you, the only thing that make me feel good about it was the fact that one day I went back and I was driving down the street and I said, you know what? I know how to get there, but I'm gonna use my navigation. So I put in my navigation, drove up to the corner. And I'm just pausing. I'm waiting. I'm like, all right, well, let me just get, I want to get up to the corner and turn and see what my navigation says. When that navigation said, Boyz II Men Boulevard, dude, I felt like a 5-year-old. Wow. I was sitting there like,
shit, that's right.
Yes.
Dude, oh, it's freaked official. Me out. Now, here's the thing. You know, people always get the little, hey, what's Boyz II Men Boulevard? And this is a, you know, everybody get the gratis name. But dude, when it showed up in the navigation, nigga,
that's official.
Like,
that's official. Hell yeah. And they show up on real. Garmin, nigga.
I don't even think Martin Luther King Parkway is on there yet. It's
what? But you know what? I was like, wow. We have
you know what
ride.
Else made me? You know what else made took away that jealousy a little bit, though, Nate? I ain't gonna lie. What took away that jealousy a little bit is when I heard the choir sing, they did not sound as good or even close. Man, we saw that choir, man. We were smashing them, son.
Yeah.
You know which brings me to my last question, which is
who
was the most famous graduate before the Roots and Boyz II Men of Kappa? Like, who?
It has some actors, honestly, and to be honest with you, the school The school only existed, I think, 6 years before we got there.
Yeah,
it was a brand new idea in the city. The building, the reason why we were in a jacked up building was because the original school was downtown in a building that was just an idea. They were trying a school, and then it started to do well.
It was on Broad Street.
And they were like, Broad Street. They said, well, let's move it to another place, and we'll turn it into a school. And for now, to just hang out with the Colombians. We can make the Colombians famous. You know that,
Colombians, right? You know what I'm saying? I wonder if they have memories of that.
Like it's a country.
Wait, who was Laia?
Laughing, Sean.
What's her name? Went there. She was on the Cosby Show. Oh, Lance.
Erica Alexander,
but her girlfriend.
Yeah. Okay. Oh.
That's right. That was with Malcolm.
Cousin Pam, the one to play Cousin Pam.
No, Charmaine.
Yes, Charmaine.
It was seen more as an acting school before we got over to Broad.
What's his name? Who was saying?
I said Black Heroes. I forget his name.
Black Heroes.
Yeah. I was friends with Xans.
Spoonji Ray J. I say 8 months.
Yes. That's right.
He went Dondre Whitfield.
No.
You're thinking of what's your name's husband?
That's Roger.
I can't remember his name.
DeAndre Whitfield. He's married to what's his name?
Sally Richardson.
Oh boy. All right. I want to wrap this up because I know Nate losing his patience. Actually,
I'm drunk now. I'm good. I'm in.
Go in. Go.
Can you? Okay. I got one. All right, one thing.
Right, go ahead.
Okay, all right, we're going in.
We are nerds on this show.
Yeah, now this is music nerd. Y'all boys done. Y'all fucking with the right ones today. All right, so look.
More to drink.
All right, so Wanye. So I've always heard, like, you know, a lot of vocal teachers and, like, vocal professors, they always say, well, you know, you shouldn't stretch your neck when you move or when you sing. You shouldn't, you know, move your neck. But being everybody a Boyz II Men disciple. Listen,
and
I'm
Stevie
like, yo,
Wonder.
That's what Wanye be doing. Like, you're the most, like, we know the Wanye movement. So I want to know, was that something that you got kind of like bounced back from vocal teachers, or was that just something that you just did because you have the most distinctive like head and neck movements?
That's
like,
how we got in the high notes, low notes.
No, it was honestly, I never got any blowback from any of the like the vocal coaches or teachers, because we didn't really have vocal coaches or teachers, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, if we sang choir, of course, I couldn't do
not
that.
Even Dumpson?
You know what I'm saying? I would have, you know,
sing diaphragmatically.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, never mind.
What'd you say, Nate?
I wasn't a Dumpson fan, because that's them dudes. He likes me either.
You know what I'm saying? No.
They're happy. I saw Dumpson and Miss Davis at this. Miss Davis is still there.
Yeah.
100 years old. Yeah, 100 years old.
Yes, he's still hanging on, boy.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Go ahead, Wanye. I'm sorry.
That right there, honestly, is it's just a dynamic thing. I mean, of course, I can do that without my neck, but I feel like it gives me a better, I guess, a better movement. You know what I'm saying? You know how sometimes you see somebody playing the saxophone and they, you know what I'm saying? They're doing that because it gives them more of a, you know what I mean, of a dynamic.
He can sing it, but he wants to feel it when he sings it.
Yeah,
but how much of your vibrato comes from your neck versus like how much comes from your
diaphragm, right?
There's this different.
My vibrato comes from like
within.
Yes, more chesty. You know what I mean? So I kind of, it depends on what I'm singing, because sometimes I move it from my throat to my diaphragm, or I move from my diaphragm to my chest. You know what I'm saying? It depends on what the tone that I'm trying to get out. You know what I mean? A lot of times you guys hear the ending of a song, it's more of a chesty head type, you know what I mean, dynamic, because it's the power, you know what I'm saying? It's where, you know, the power comes from. And if I got to hold the long note, that's when I switch it to my diaphragm, you know what I mean? But
I'll tell you another one. This guy didn't learn how to sing falsetto until almost 4, 5, 6 years into this Boyz II Men thing. He practiced.
Wow. He had zero falsetto. So I literally,
that's crazy.
I literally started trying. I literally became like a student of my own voice. You know what I'm saying? So I know where certain pieces of my voice take me. Like I could sing it many different ways, but I also know what the audience calls for. And my performance.
How do you find that? How do you find the right way to sing the right thing? So, like, what is it? Just intuition?
Like Nate said, I just sing. I just sing. I mean, I don't have to be doing shit. I'll be in the house and I hear like a acoustic and I'll sing and then I'll figure something out. And then once I figure it out, I'll practice that over and over again, because I always believe that I can be better. I never feel like, you know, like people say, oh my God, you're the best. No, I'm striving to get better and better every day. Cause if you're the best, you can't grow anymore. You know what I'm saying? So I want to be better and better with whatever style I choose to sing, because I know that there's going to be multifaceted of styles that I'm going to need to, you know what I mean, sing in order to be an artist, you know?
Is there a particular music, just as long as you guys have been doing it and just as seasoned of singers as you are, is there still a particular style of music that gives you more trouble than the other, like jazz versus gospel versus classical, or, you know, is there what's still a challenge to you?
Yeah, we are, like I said, Sean to me is he has a really good jazz ear. So when it comes to something like that, I always look to Sean to start it. Now, I know what it's supposed to sound like, but I know when Sean starts it, I know where it's supposed to go. So once he starts it, I know where I fit in. You know what I'm saying? So there's no hiccup there. Same with Nate. Nate has a great jazz ear. Nate's like, his musical roundness is just like fucking crazy to me. But when he starts something, we all know exactly where it goes. So it can be a jazz song, or it can be like Ribbons in the Sky. You know, you know what I mean? That a cappella version, that's jazzy and R&B. It's a lot of different facets. So when it comes to...
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure if y'all heard that record. That's a fun record.
When it comes to that, we all, I guess, give enough of a strength to not make it a hurdle. You know what I mean?
I understand.
And it's knowing your comfort, not so much your comfort zone, but knowing... We all know that when someone sings a part, we know if that's the part they should sing. Like, there are times when we'll sing something and we'll be like, nah, I think Sean should sing it because he's got a little bit more of this or whatever. Yeah. And we know that, you know what I'm saying? And we tend to know when to fall in, or a guy, somebody, perfect example, we'll come to the studio. I'm like, yeah, well, I wanted Juan to sing this, and Juan be like, nah, well, I think Nate should probably do this part, because we all know each other's voices. So whenever we hear anything that anybody brings us, we know who should sing what and where it should go.
Mm-hmm. That's so dope.
What's the warm-up game like? Like, how does that work? As in, like, I once talked to Christian McBride, and he said that he warmed up, he practiced for the 10 to 10 minutes before the gig, and that was it. And I assume that with you guys, it's way different than that. Like, I'm sure
you interview students of Seth Riggs or that level of...
I don't warm up at all. I'm not even going to sit and lie to you.
Yeah. Wow.
You just walk in?
Man, I hate y'all.
I swear to you, I don't. I just...
When I wake up in the morning and I know I have a show, I sing the highest note that I'm going to sing on the show. And if it comes out clear, I know I'm good.
You're good.
And another and reason why I don't...
But any Luther requirements, like take the air conditioning off, don't sleep?
Oh, yeah. Man. Oh, yeah.
I mean, of course.
Yeah, we don't like air conditioning and all that. And okay. That'll definitely...
So is there, like, on the tour bus, you fight over, like, okay, it was 78, now it's 72. And
Juan likes it blazing hot. Sean and I like it more in the middle, kind of. We don't like it cold, but we don't like it steamy. Like, Juan will go in the room and turn the shower on and steam, you know what I'm saying? But another reason why
Los Angeles, Vegas, and Tampa, just for the record.
Well, another reason why I don't like to practice, because I never really know where I'm going to end up. Meaning, depending on what we're singing and what we're doing, I know what parts I'm supposed to sing for each song, but I don't know what I'm singing, because I don't know where I'm going to be. It's kind of like open.
And believe it or not, like, sometimes that opens up for interesting things to come out of your throat.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool sometimes. Like, right now, we're going through a season change in LA, so my voice is a little raspier. And if you're recording or if you're doing something, sometimes that sounds cool. You know what I mean? We forget that, like, our voices are instruments. And sometimes those little, like, those quirks, those idiosyncrasies vocally could bring out a texture that might resonate soulfully. You know what I'm saying? Because 100%. You might not feel as clean or whatever, but it has such a rasp and a ruggedness to it, it makes you sing different. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like, Amir, when you play different drum skins. You know what I'm saying? When you got, like, different snares, whatever, it has different resonances. And different sounds, and textures, and feels when you strike it. It's the same thing vocally with us. Like, yeah, we want to sound good all the time, but... You know, when it comes to weather and when it comes to stuff like that, we just adapt to what our voices are doing at that moment. And we just
at that time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wish I had more power in the tenor range, but I don't. Like, I used to sit back and listen to Sean and Juan and be like, damn, I could sing it, but I just can't. I don't have that bite to it. Like, I just don't have that rip. You know what I'm saying? Now, above them, I do. But in that, it's like, I can sing it, but I just don't, I always wanted to be that, have that tenor guy that just could just rip. I don't have that in it. I don't have that bite.
Does age fuck with y'all's voices? Does age fuck with y'all's voices? Because I saw Billy Joel 2 years ago and he's playing things in C, but it sounds in B flat. Like, it's a whole step down because his voice is down. You guys don't have that?
That happened to us.
Not me personally.
That's a blessing.
That's real.
I guess because, again, I tend to be all over the place. I don't, a key doesn't really matter for the most part for me. Mm-hmm. Like, when you change it, drop it. Let me rephrase that. then when you start to drop it lower, it affects me, one, because of my pitch, the perfect pitch thing. It irritates me because I know it's the wrong key. So I struggle to sing it in a different key.
Blessing and a curse.
And me and Juan used to fight a lot because he can't sing. I mean, not that he can't, but because he sings so many of those songs, like every song is like every song is way up in the stratosphere. Some of them we have to adjust, and I'd be like, dude, you really want to drop it, dude? I can't do eight of them in a row. I'm like, can you do seven of them in a row? But you know, we kind of fight with that. But I mean, it can become a struggle when you got that kind of bite with the way his voice is, when you got to dig into a song that way on every single. I mean, if you did a 30-minute Boyz II Men set, this clown sings into the road up there. I'll make love to you up there.
Up there.
Bended knee up, like everything. He ends everything in the sky. So Sean and I may be like, well, you know, it's just 20 minutes. He like, nigga, it's 20 minutes, but it ain't 20 minutes, nigga. Right. It's 20. That's a whole different.
Oh, we have so you're saying that sometimes these songs won't make it?
Yeah, and then I'll mess with him every now and then.
We have to do the hits. That's bottom line.
Yeah,
gotcha. We have to do the hits. But sometimes, like, there are some songs that aren't major hits that I'm like, nigga, like, Color of Love.
But a song like Water Runs Dry, that isn't required.
Everybody loves that record. Everybody loves singing that. We would sing that. Yeah. If that's the only one we had to sing every fucking day.
Every day. Every day.
Can You Stand the Rain at any show? Do y'all do Can You Stand the Rain at all?
No, we haven't.
I will tell you that's one that we definitely need our brother on. We need Mike on that record.
Okay.
What's the status with y'all and Mike now? Is things cool? Is it not cool? Or y'all speaking on it?
I think we as a group, us three, we're cool with where we are with Mike. We just don't know where we are with Mike. I'll leave it at that. I mean, again, it's like we've gone through a lot. We've been through some bad things, some good things. It's, you know, we love him. We don't hate him. We don't wish any ill feel on anything about him. But unfortunately, we tried to bring him back a couple times, and you know, some of our milestones, whether it was the 20th album or, you know, 20 years or 25, and it just didn't work out because unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize that Mike has been away from the group longer than he was in the group.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like he left in 1999. We had that just started in 92.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing him back for the 20th anniversary and the 25th anniversary, Mike McCary is a different guy that we didn't grow up with from 99 to 2020. Like, he's just a different person.
He's just
been gone for a long time. And at that time, we were all growing up, families, becoming men. This is when we really started to learn different things about ourselves,
with each other.
We needed to grow up around each other so we could understand those different things about each other. But he was all the way over there, so we don't even know. In some cases, honestly, it sounds sad to say it, we don't even know who he is right now.
Who he is? No.
Yeah, honestly, we really know who he was back then.
With that on top of it.
Mike was always the other dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we got freaking Pathfinders, Mike would get a rodeo. If we got, you know what I'm saying, Benz's, Mike would get a Porsche. If we, you know what I'm saying? He just was always separate from us. Like, we would hang out and Mike would not be there. You know what I'm saying?
Mike came into the school in the same year that I came in, and Mike had a pitch problem. And, you know, it kind of alienated him away from a lot of people in the choir in the school at that time, because Mike also had that attitude, well, I'm going to do what I can. And if you don't like it, fuck you. And that's kind of what his attitude was. He's like, I'm gonna try to sing it. If it don't get there, talk about me all you want. The hell with you. And if you talk about me too much, then we might have to have some physical altercation about what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And that's just who he was.
I see that.
Wow.
What part of Philly was Mike from? What part of Philly is he from?
He's from
Logan.
Logan.
Okay. All right.
Actually, Sean, where were you from in Philly?
of the suburbs of Southwest Philadelphia.
Man, shut up.
What is that called? Upper Darby? What is he saying? I don't understand. What is that? I don't never.
The damn suburbs. I came from Southwest Philadelphia. Oh. I live on 59th and Belmar Terrace, right down the street from Myers Park and Paul Brothers and Riddick's. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where I come from.
I know.
But yeah, okay. I'm from Southwest.
I grew up in Southwest.
So you took the 36 trolley. I get it.
Yeah.
I grew up in 13th. Southwest, like 58th and Woodland Avenue, like Greenway Avenue. And then
Crest.
Crest what?
Yeah. Crest Supermarket, boy.
What? Yeah, all right. So I used to bag at Crest, son.
For real?
What?
Damn. That's where I used to get my 8-track tapes.
What, man? Help me with your bags, miss. What? How you get a quarter, nigga? What? Anyway, I grew up over there. And then when I started going to performing arts, whatever, I moved into South Philly. So I grew up over there. But no, matter of fact, my street was Alden Street, right in front of Crest.
Okay. I know who that is. My grandma lived around that way, so that's how I know. Thursdays was shopping for grandma at Crest.
That's right. That's right, boy.
Okay. What? Now, damn it. All right. Now. All right.
Let it out.
Do you guys ever get sentimental for Philly at all?
Do you
act on it? Okay, so
they GPS the fucking directions and the fucking street name. Yes, they get nostalgic about Philly.
No, but my shit's a little bit different. Like, I will actually designate maybe every other month. I will
and go home.
I will actually ride the L.
No, you don't.
We tried that.
For real. I've done it.
We should try that.
Before every Roots picnic, like when rehearsals start, I'll designate about 6 hours to just sit on the L from 69th Street all the way to the other end and full circle it.
Yeah.
I used to try that.
What you mean try? It didn't work?
Yeah. Well, I couldn't wear a hat or glasses. I was caught every time because it's all part of the outfit. So either way, there's nothing I could hide with unless I just put a hood over my head. This somebody think I'm crazy.
Right. But I mean, do you guys like? When's the last time that you really just
sunk in?
Just went to landmarks of your life, or like try to chase ghosts? I call it chasing ghosts.
I did that last time.
Yeah, a couple years ago, I took my kids to my actual block where I live. Like, I took all my kids, my wife. I was like, "Yo, we gonna go to my neighborhood where I grew up." Like the whole shit.
And was it like an episode of Blackish? Were they scared?
They were just kind of astounded. Because, yeah, they're Cali kids. They survived. Right. You know what I'm saying? So when they actually got out the car and they saw.
Well, you got out the car. Okay.
Oh, yeah, we got the car. And they saw rundowns, you know, houses and the streets all fucked up and the whole 9 yards. And they was like, Daddy. My daughter was like, Daddy. Which house was yours, right? And I said, well, that's my house right there. You know, I pointed at the house. That's where I grew up. She's like, boy, it is a really small house. It's a small house. Like, 5 of us grew up in that house. So, yeah, like, you know, and I took them to get cheesesteaks and the whole 9 yards. So, yeah, like that. We got a dope city. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's grimy sometimes. And it's got its moments. But ultimately.
I go back there a lot.
Did they gentrify your spot? That's what I really wanted to get to.
Not where I live.
Southwest, not Southwest. No. It's going to be last. Yeah.
No, it's still black.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, no. Where I was in South Philly, my house at the time was probably like $130,000. It's like $950,000.
Yeah.
They done took the whole South Philly area. But, I mean, I get a soft spot when I go back because, I don't really normally talk about this kind of stuff, but last year, Christmas Eve, I took my son. And I took my best friend who passed away from COVID. He was in Philly. He used to live in Philly. So I called him. I said, listen, dude, I need you to just go to Target. I just need you to buy every sock they got. I need you to buy every sleeping bag they got. I need you to buy every pair of gloves. And we just went out and gave out socks and sleeping bags and tents to homeless people. Because I know I used to pass them every day, you know what I'm saying, when I went downtown, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I know that Philly has a big homeless problem. So
I just got a real soft spot for homeless people. I mean, whether knowing what their story is or not, it just has always bothered me. So I like going back to Philly and just showing up and just giving people stuff. Like I'll drive past a homeless guy and just give him $100 and just so he can get the react. Just I don't even care what he does with it because has nothing to do with me. I just want to feel the reaction that it means something to him and hopefully he'll do the right thing. But growing up in that town, knowing where we all come from and not having nowhere near what we have now, to go back and to put smiles on people's faces like that and to try different things like that, that's what I get a soft spot for when I go back.
That's love, man. Do you think, is that kind of what got you into doing the rehabs and doing the housing, like with your show and everything?
A little bit. I'm really, my dad brought me up and my brothers and family on, you know, always being able to do something with your hands, whether this is music or whatever, it happens, great. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, a man has to be able to take care of himself. And the only thing, his best two tools is his hands. So we were always taught to figure out something to do with them. So that was like a combination of the two for me, knowing that I come from nothing and knowing that I have the ability, not just with my hands, but financially I have the ability I didn't have before. So it was like bringing them all together. So that was we came up with an idea of for our charity called the Boys to Men House. And one of the ideas was to try to build, this was, you know, before COVID and all the craziness, was to try to build these Boys to Men houses in these urban communities where, you know, kids, you know, after school programs, people can come get on the computer, all that kind of stuff, to where people would have the ability to enjoy, you know, the things that we couldn't enjoy when we were kids. So doing the stuff with my hands and building, that's something that I've always loved to do and will always continue to do. And like I said, that homeless thing is really big for me because I always believe that there's stories in all people. And, you know, we all pass most homeless people and be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, he probably, you know, drugs. We always assume that. But if we actually knew the story of each individual, I'm sure we all would think different. And the fact that we don't know them makes us all think of them the same way. And I think they get a bad rap a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Living in Cali will change your life and change your mind about the homeless because it's no way.
Well, I've been to Skid Row there and I've taken stuff to them too. And I know that their homeless problem has gotten worse. I know that their homeless people are more aggressive than most. And again, it's because it's the stories. I mean, you got to remember some of these people belong there, that they just did wrong things or they're drug. And then some people might have been a day and a half from paying their mortgage and they lost everything. Or someone might have lost their job and their wife left them and their kid died from something. Like, we don't know their story.
And the cost of living is crazy. So for anybody,
without a doubt, it can drive you into so many different situations that we don't know.
Yeah. All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor. as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to end with this question. You guys are beyond ubiquitous, okay? You're like oxygen or water. So I'm certain that at some point certain things didn't impress you. But what key figure, individually I'm asking this question, who's the person that you met that really was like an oh shit, this is really happening moment? That really like heart palpitations, or, you know, that you were impressed that you got to meet and or work with or whatever?
Prince.
Really?
Yeah. For me, it was Prince, because, I mean, I just, you know, he's a mysterious dude. You know what I'm saying? You know, so not too many people, you know, really know too much about him. Not too many people are around him. You know what I'm saying? And it was always like, you know, you always wonder. So after Purple Rain, you know, I was really, really into that whole Purple Rain thing. And, you know, when we actually were invited to his house, to his studio.
Paisley Park, right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I didn't really like let the fellas know too much, but I was really like in awe, like, wow, this dude is really Prince. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
right.
I met Michael Jackson.
Is really Prince. That's what, you know what I'm
saying? No, I get it. I know that feeling, man.
I met Michael Jackson. Funny. Michael is cool as hell. You know what I'm saying? But Michael is not as mysterious. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm just talking about like when I met him.
Yeah, I got you.
You know what I'm saying? He was really a cool dude, and so was Prince. But it was almost like when we met him, I almost felt like I wasn't supposed to be meeting him. You feel what I'm saying?
It's kind of like mystical.
Man, like, am I really? Like, this is Prince, but I was keeping it cool. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't like, oh my God, Prince, but I was just like, yo. And then, you know, it was a lot of stories. It turned into a lot of real funny stories as time progressed. You know what I'm saying? But I swear, that was one of the moments where I was like, oh shit, you know what I mean? And I've met almost everybody that I've wanted to meet. You know what I'm saying?
Speaking of which, have you ever heard of his demo for Tevin, which is based on the Simpin' remix?
No.
You never heard the P? Prince, all right, I'm a Prince collegist.
That damn Prince, he always... State.
Whatever, okay.
Okay, hold on, stop, pause that, hold that thought, because Prince collegist, I'm going to see if you get this real quick. This is a little trivia. The two albums, there's a song, very, very big song for us,
that I know.
Oh, you know yes. already.
The harmony behind Thank You. For Seven.
You are a Princeologist.
I'm also a Boys to Men-ologist.
So thank you. So what was stolen? What was it stolen from? What was it stolen from?
From Seven.
Seven. We'll watch them fall. Okay, yeah, got you.
It's the background harmonies behind Juan's lead.
It's probably one of Prince's great. Yes.
When
I heard that, I was like, okay, I would have done the same thing too, because Prince has nice little pockets of harmony that you could pay
tribute. I was just
to.
Hoping he ain't get us for it, dude, because I was like, I think we should. Maybe we shouldn't. It's too late.
Mm-hmm. No.
Did he say something?
No, he didn't.
No.
Thank Jesus.
But I'm sure he heard it.
Yeah, he heard it.
I'm sure he heard it.
If he didn't say that's nothing, what he borrowed.
Probably we liked it.
Yeah. Right, Amir? Didn't say that's what he borrowed.
But yeah, he did a
yeah,
song.
But the Tevin Campbell demo for the P, which, okay, more than classic Prince songs, I'm really a friend of, like, his worst songs.
Right.
And this is his second worst song ever.
Nice.
Worse than Illusion Coma Pimp?
No. Worse. Okay. His absolute worst song is actually a song called Work That Fat.
Yeah. Okay. You played it one time. You played it on your show.
We talked about this.
Yes.
It is awful.
But yeah,
his
actually, you know what? I still think that that track that Tevin did that track, but yes, there's a 4-bar drum break at the very end of the Simpin' remix that he used as the basis of that song, and I always
word wanted to it. I love that remix too. I bought that single as a kid. I had the single.
Remix.
Yeah, Kasingle. Man, I love that record, man. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So who's your person, Sean?
It would have to be MJ. He's the reason why I even sing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just his whole vocal, I was always in love with his vibrato. And, mm-hmm. you know, quite naturally, when you copy somebody or when you listen to somebody every day, you can't help but to copy, you know, someone mm-hmm. vocally. So sometimes I'll hit something that might sound like Mike, and it's not by design. It just comes out. You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. you know, to know that Mike was the type of dude that when we did see him, he would ask how our family is, how are you doing? Like, you know, it was mm-hmm. normal. Like to have these conversations with a guy who is the greatest entertainer the world has ever seen. Mm-hmm. And to actually work with him intimately, you know, I did the "What More Can I Give" thing, you know, when 9/11 right. did.
And, for 9/11. And
for him to personally invite me in, come to the studio before he even, you know, did the song, we're just chopping it up about stuff. And then he goes in, tells me what I need to sing, blah, 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 and do it. Like, in my wildest dreams, I would have never mm-hmm. thought having a relationship. Like, this wasn't just like, you know,
oh, I know this guy.
Like, we were cool with the man, and he right. understood wow. us, and we understood him. You know what I'm saying? And that was the cool thing about that. So I was
actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. The one question we never asked Jimmy Jam was the making of the title track. Were you guys there for the creation of it, or were you just brought in at the end to sing your parts on the title track of History? Because
we sang it. He wasn't there, but we sang it in the studio.
There. Mike was there.
Was Mike there? Well,
remember we came
in? Yeah, he was there.
We talked for like 3 hours.
Yep.
Dude, well, when we actually sang the record, though, was he there?
When we sang the harmonies to History, Mike was in the studio. He came in and we talked for like 3 hours before we actually sang.
Wow. I wanted to, because that song is so intricate and, you know, made in 95 before like Ableton, and like the type of demands that he had to create that song really wasn't common.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I didn't ask Jimmy Jam on air, but I asked like, what was your, like the nightmare project that, and he said, oh no, without a doubt, History. Cause we would present something. He's like, all right, push it more.
Right.
And, you know, add this in, and it goes all over the place. I wanted to know, were you guys there for
the chaos,
the stacking of that?
No, we
did you come in
that.
At the end? Like,
we did our part, and then they took it and kind of ran with it.
Oh, okay. I see.
We got mad at Mike too, because he compressed us and squished us all the way down, barely.
Oh yeah, he stuck us in the back.
Well, I assume that was you guys singing on it. So,
Sean, I was going to ask you, man. So I didn't know until like a couple years ago that Anthony David is your cousin.
Yeah, it's my brother.
And big ups to Anthony David. That's my brother, man. And he told me when y'all did the record, y'all covered Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Right.
On his album, the As Above Solo album for 2011. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me just about tracking that. And I said, so, man, so what was it like? Like, Sean in the studio, he was like, dude, Sean is just one take. He's like, he's singing all these harmonies. Like, he's finding notes in between the notes. Like, he just had nothing but positivity, like, to say about you, man. That, so, like,
I did not realize he could even sing, Fonte. Like,
really?
I saw him. We were all coming out of Madison Square Garden in New York. And we bumped into NDIRE, and he was with her. And I was like, yo, what's up, cousin? I was like, what are you doing here? And he was like,
I'm drinking milk
now. I was like, you doing what? Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like,
nigga, I didn't know you could sing. Like, I had no, like, he never, because he would come to Philly for the summer sometime. We would hang out, and, you know, that whole thing. So he never once told me that he had the, you know, he could sing or write or anything like that. So when I first saw him on, you know, then, and then I saw him on TV, and now he got his albums out, I was like, oh, shit. So I was like, you know, and what's funny is Tiny's my second cousin.
Tiny, yeah, Tiny.
Yeah.
Oh, so your people's Atlanta.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I got a lot of family in Savannah. That's where my mother and my father's from. So they're both.
I did not know that.
I got a lot of people in Savannah. So, you know, so, yeah, like it's crazy. Like I got a lot of family members that, you know, I found out that one of the guys from, remember the song, Something's Going On.
The guy, you and me, nigga. You and me. You and me. You and me. They had two jams. They had Something's Going On, and they had Rose From My Heart, and then it was over.
Yeah, right. Strong. Yeah, yeah. That group is like a second cousin of mine, too. So it's like, I'm just kind of like, it's, I got a musical.
Wow.
Man, it's crazy.
What was y'all thoughts? So we talking about groups. What was y'all thoughts on? Okay, two questions. What were y'all thoughts on 15 Minutes by Mark Morrison? And what were y'all thoughts on
Mark Nelson?
I said not Mark Morrison. That's just Turn on the Mac, which is one of the greatest songs ever. But Mark Nelson,
15 minutes.
15 minutes and As Yet.
We used to clown Mark with that 15 minutes.
Well, I'll tell you the As Yet story. I'll tell you the As Yet story for me.
Man,
I am.
Let's go.
I remember verbatim. I was sitting at the crib. I was watching BET. Mm-hmm. And I was just, commercial came on. So I got up, walked in the kitchen, getting something to drink. Video came on. And I heard the first verse. And we had a lot of vision of love that I heard. I drank, you know, and I was like, hold up. I kept listening. And I'm like, hold on, somebody is trying to steal our shit. Who the fuck is this? So I ran into the room and I looked at the TV and I'm like, who the fuck is this yellow nigga? Who's this? What is this? This other, but the curly motherfucker. Then I saw Mark. I was like, this motherfucker. He done went and did another Boyz II Men and didn't fuck. He's trying to get us. He's trying to get us. I can't remember. I don't know if it was Juan or Sean. I called somebody. I said, yo, Mark is trying to do it to us because he got a group and they singing our shit. That's exactly what I said. Like, dude. Now, mind you, I ain't heard nobody that close ever. So I knew it had to be somebody in the nucleus to know how we did stuff. So I'm like,
right.
The way the background harmonies was moving, I was like, somebody no, was sleeping in my bed.
It was the greatest Boyz II Men by ever.
Tony Rich, the baby face to you?
Man, I'm telling you, I lost it. I really, and I was like, dude, they're trying to get us.
Somebody do the code.
Yeah. I was,
somebody dude, selling I was hurt the secret
because
the spices.
It kept playing, and it sounded incredible. Like, honestly,
and the album was good.
That by far was it? One of the baddest songs I had heard that was one of the baddest songs of the 90s, cuz. Wow. That song was nuts.
Yeah.
The fact that they had different guys singing different parts. They had the bass guy. They had the high guy. They had the falsetto. They had the guy with the flips. And man, I'm telling you, they were the close. That song right there was the closest song I've ever heard any group on the planet sing to What We Do.
All right. Can I add an unpopular take? Because I have a theory.
Uh-oh.
I have a theory.
Uh-oh.
And if you verify it or if you choose to verify it or not verify it, it's okay. But I have a sneak. Because here's the thing. I always wanted to know that why did Faces Reign of Hits just abruptly stop in 2001. Coincidentally, the same time that the members of As Yet left the fold, or at least under, left, I forgot who was managing them. Yes.
Yeah.
Were they his ghostwriters?
Well, I will tell you this.
You didn't say
I know
no.
That Mark did some writing with Face. I do know that. Now, what songs they were,
Good night.
I don't know.
This is Quest Love Supreme. I'll see y'all later.
Him and I have had that conversation, and I know he's done some writing. I mean, I don't know what we never got into what songs, but Mark came to them as a writer, not a singer.
Right.
He was under Yap Yun, under his wife's thing. Right, and then when that imploded, then
he got put into As Yet. That wasn't his get up.
I know.
Wait, where does he live now?
He's actually back in New York now. I just talked to him 2 days ago.
Okay, I just meant like what kind of house is he living in? Trump Tower. That's how
No. He's not quite that.
No,
I mean, I
wanted to ask Babyface that question when he did the show, but you know, we had such a good vibe. I didn't want to be like, you didn't really write all the songs, did you? Who really wrote them?
Well, like, I'll tell you this, dude. Here's the one thing with Face, man, and I'll tell you, and I'm sure the guys can vouch, man. One thing that though we wrote pretty good songs, we learned how to critique our own ability to write songs by writing with this guy. Meaning, you would hear him, he would write a song, he would write a lyric or a verse, and he would sing it, or he would play it over and over again, and he'd take out a word, he'd put another word in, he'd take out another word, put another word in. Now, if all of us were listening, we'd be like, it flows just fine. His theory, and it's really interesting theory. His theory is the song will never be done until you stop. Because if you don't stop, if you're a good enough songwriter, you'll always find a better way
to
write that song.
You'll always find a way to make it better. 100%.
So eventually, 100%. It's not about how good you are as a songwriter. It's when you know and have the ability to stop.
This is
because otherwise, you'll just sit there. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And he was, nah, that's not. And somebody like him, we learned how to put certain notes on certain words because people would hear. Let's just say it was a major third chord that hit the home run of a song. Like, what's the song?
Science.
Say I love you. Say I care. Sorry, I'm drinking. And always will be there. Like the way he puts certain words that lands on certain chords, they're for you to remember those words. You ever notice when we think of a song, we may not always know the song. We'll go, and I love you, because I love you are the notes that he put there on purpose that he knew you were going to remember that part. That's how he writes records, which is extremely interesting. I never knew that before we sat with him. And you don't really know unless you have the conversation.
Unpaid bill.
The funny thing about songwriters.
Oh, go ahead, Sean.
No, I was going to say, the funny thing about songwriters now, too, in comparison, the songs that are out now that I listen to, the R&B songs to be specific, they're written a lot like how we used to write our songs previous. Like, you know, there were songs that we would write and we would let Babyface hear, for example, and he also would say, you know, say less. Like, you know, like with everything that you're saying, you know, we would try to fit in a sentiment. Oh, I love you and everything. And we're growing together and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. And he would basically say, say less.
Just say I love you.
Like, And sometimes that's it. You don't need to say anything else. And I've noticed that with a lot of songs now with R&B records, and I got a 16-year-old son, and he can't even follow a lot of the lyrics that go on with our artists, because there's so much being said.
They're almost trying to be rappers. You know what I mean? It's almost like, and the real rap, I mean, if we gonna keep it all the way funky, we kind of got, to me, I think we kind of got Bone to blame for that. Like,
but you know what?
We
were taught in songwriting that you have to understand that the average audience of who you're writing for, you got to look at them as having a seventh grade education. You can't give them too much. You got to get right to the point so they'll never forget it.
George Clinton said the same thing. We had him on, and he was saying, he was like, all that Parliament shit. He said, man, I was just trying to write nursery rhymes.
Yeah.
He was like, that's what it was.
And that's it. Face just has the ability. I'm going to tell you, it's deeper than his songwriting, dude. It's his freaking melodies. His melodies are things that just, they just live inside you, dude. They're like... Mm-hmm.
to answer your question, because I know you asked this question about the last, you know, this could be the last question and we'll move forward. I never really had a person that I met in the business that I felt that way about that. Oh my God, they kind of lit me up. Because my favorite person that passed away already was just Sam Cooke. I was a big Sam Cooke, Soul Stirrers fan, Highway QC, like all of that. I grew up on that, you know, Southern gospel stuff and Sam
Quartet shit.
Into the contemporary. So you never met Bobby Womack?
The guys up in Chicago. Say again?
No, or I figured at least Bobby Womack could fill that void
exactly.
for you.
Exactly. So I grew up on all that. But I will tell you that Face for me on the songwriting aspect was the only person because, I mean, I love Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis because of their feels and the things that they did. But I always wanted to know how this guy was able to write the song where it's always intriguing to me how he puts the right notes on the right words.
On the right lyric.
It means everything to a song, dude. I don't care what you, people used to say, well, here, I got a poem. Can you make this into a song? It's not that simple. Unless you know how to physically put the right words on to the right note that people remember, it's not going to have the significance. He is a genius at figuring out the best way to do that to where if you don't know the words, you just hum the melody and then maybe three words, you know, and it's on those notes that he made sure he put there on purpose. That's the guy that if you asked me in my career that I kind of was being around him and working with him, that was awestruck for me.
Face was like that for me, you know what I'm saying? Just as a, you know, songwriter, like I would study him and Face, and he was kind of like him and Stevie were my two, like when you talk about like putting, you know, the power of this melody, Stevie was just someone who his melodies would be like very simple and you could just sing it, but the shit he playing under that shit.
Yeah.
Nigga.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, piano players could never agree. It's like, well, I think this is a F minor 13th.
And you know why? Because Stevie don't know. He can't see the shit. He don't know.
Right.
He don't know. He just feels.
He just feels. Yes, 100%.
Yes, he does. Well, Unpaid Bill,
what was the question?
I think this episode officially tops the Huey Lewis episode as the most educational.
Wow.
Educational.
This is game. This is high level game right here, bro. This shit is.
I feel like, man,
you know, I did less talking. I did more listening.
Boys to Men should teach choral music at universities because clearly they need a kid. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it would. I would take that class
at Kappa.
I mean, just guess.
Yeah, y'all need to start a Patreon. I put something on that shit.
Hey, no, but
they got wine. Hey, man.
Thank you, bro. You know what I'm saying? Thank you for always being real. Always.
Thank you.
Same. Every time we see you, man, it's always the same. It's like where we left off, man.
Yeah.
You know, you a real brother. You are really, really loved over here, man. And anytime you need us, you know what.
I'm telling you, I don't do much shit in Corona without getting paid, nigga. So you mean something.
Nathan Morris, ladies and gentlemen.
Cheers.
I'm here.
Like, this is all Kappa, my guys. We love. That's
or
all
I appreciate
this is
about.
Thank you.
I love you guys just as much, man. All right. Well, guys, thank you. I'm not blowing smoke. This should have been
Talk
a masterclass.
Number two, nigga.
Man, fucking Boys to Men.
This should have been a masterclass. Thank you very much. I appreciate this. On behalf.
Nah, man. For real. Thank y'all for real. Y'all made every slow jam tape I ever made for a girl from like 7th, 8th grade.
Win.
Y'all made all the shit.
Yes. When we was having sex to music.
Wait.
We used to call them butt tapes.
let's be real.
Let's be real. That's what we call
them. Of course
it was. My crew would tell you we used to call, yo, we're the butt tape, cuz.
Okay. Okay. I promise this is the last question. Because you guys have kids now. Watching your kids and seeing how Gen Z is. do you have hope, musical hope for the future? And I'm not, and I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to make this a
not trying to throw nobody
into the bus. Like yeah, grumpy old guy.
I'm with you, cuz, and I'll speak because I guess my son that's involved in music right now is the oldest.
Right.
I do have a little hope. He grew up with us. He understands it. He shares it with his friends. He can see the difference. Now, mm-hmm. I was always concerned that most kids nowadays can't see the difference. I was also concerned that we would turn into our grandparents or our fathers, like, oh, well, we don't like that. But there really is something to the music that we've done, because if you notice, the 90s and everything is starting to come back around, it's because a lot of these kids just weren't exposed to it. Mm-hmm. I think the exposure is more important than anything. They will make the right decisions, but they have to be exposed.
I saw that. And to your point, Nate, I saw that a couple years ago when they had it was a social media thing where they had the Running Man challenge or whatever. But everybody was dancing to My Boo by Ghost Town DJs.
Oh, wow.
And I saw like a bunch of kids. They're like, oh, what is this song? And like, that was one of the first times I saw a song from like 96. That song is from 96. Right. That shit re-entered. It went like number one again after like however, like 20 plus fucking years.
They just got to be exposed, man.
It's got to be exposed.
It's happening to Fleetwood Mac right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Dreams Mac, is now a top five song in 2020 on Bill. Like,
crazy. I'm telling you, man. The melodies, man.
It's happening.
Melodies.
Well, gentlemen, I thank you very much from the bottom of my heart for doing the show.
Thank y'all, brothers, man. For real. This has been amazing.
Thank you,
man.
For like, your talent.
Oh, man. Like, just thank y'all for everything. Real. Thank you for the music. For real.
On behalf of Sugar Love Steve Bahia, Fonticolo, and LA Laser Hair Removal, formerly known as Bill Acoustine, formerly known as Unpaid Bill. All right. We'll see you on the next go round of Questlove Supreme. I'm Questlove signing off. I will see y'all next time. Thank you.
Hey, this is Sugar Steve. Make sure you keep up with us on Instagram at QLS and let us know what you think and who should be next to sit down with us. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.